Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. How are you? How are you?
We're deviating from the script, man. Sorry. I can't do this.
There's no how are you in the script.
I know. It's in my head.
You know, I read everything that's on the teleprompter. You know that.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm pretty fantastic. The weather in Halifax has been great. My parents were here for the last few days, so we did a lot of sightseeing and ate some great food. And we had like steak and lobster one night, and then we had chicken shish kebab things that Joel did on the barbecue tonight, and just deliciousness. So yeah, they've been here for 3 days, I guess. Did the drive in from Ontario, brought me the rest of my stuff. So yeah, it was good.
That's great.
I have my PC now.
Ooh. What's the first thing you're going to play on it?
Oh, Civ 5.
Ah, good.
God Kings. Definitely. Definitely.
That's what I like to hear. We should play a multiplayer game at some point and not invite Boba Fettish, because he didn't want to play with you, right? That was sort of...
I don't think he wants to play with me.
No. I'm pretty sure he hasn't been bugging you for the last couple months.
Nope.
Well, that's good that you got your PC.
Yeah, I'm excited. So yeah, I should be up and gaming shortly. I have to work the next couple of days, but I think this weekend is going to be the whole unpack and set up the spare room, which is my office type gaming space. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting back in. I have my 32-inch TV that's going to be my computer monitor, so I'm really excited about that.
Wow.
Yep. Well, because Joel has, we have the, whatever it is, 40 lots of inches in the living room.
Technical term.
Yes. So yes, we have that set up in the living room with the Xbox, so my little teeny TV from my little teeny apartment can now be my computer monitor, so woot woot.
That's good.
Can't see it, but it's being raised.
Ah, the roof just got a little higher. I was going to say that I have a 27-inch monitor, so I'm trying to picture a 32, and I guess it wouldn't be really that much bigger.
Well, 5 inches.
I mean, you know what I mean. I'm just saying, like, when I went from 21 inch to... What? Sorry?
I said 5 inches is a big deal, man.
No, I know. I'm getting to that. I was just saying that I had a 21 inch, and then when I went, I was like, I want big. I want a big, giant monitor. So I went in and bought, like, the 27 inch. That's as big as you can get while still staying within the monitor class, because yours is a TV, right? Yeah. So it takes a while to get used to, but after a bit, it's like... trying to go back down to a 21 inch was tough. So
yeah, like, I mean, I have my, I can't remember if it's 23 or 24, but the one that I thought was big when I bought it, and it's sitting there on the desk right now next to the TV, and I'm just like, oh my God, you're so little. What am I going to do with you now? Set up dual monitors. That's not the point.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny. I've had this 27 inch set up for a year now. And I've had my two other 21-inch just sitting there. And I could technically set up three monitors. And the desk is big enough, but the desk is never clean enough. So if I could get the damn thing clean for a good day so I could set it all up, then maybe I could do that. But I don't know what the point is of having three monitors. That's just kind of overkill, don't you think?
No such thing.
No. Okay. Well, that's... okay.
So before we get into the meat of our show, I just want to give you guys a little bit of an announcement here. So our show, The Gamers Inn, is no longer associated with BTW Productions. Ryan and I made the choice to leave a few weeks ago, but we've now officially taken down our forum and are no longer an affiliate. So anyone who's looking to interact with us here at TGI can do so on our website and on our many social media outlets, or possibly coming soon, as Ryan is telling me he's going to work on it this weekend, our very own Gamers Inn community forums here at gamersinpodcast.com. So we want to take a minute to thank everyone who listens to us for your positive and constructive feedback and for coming back to support us each and every week. So we love you guys. Thank you very much.
Yes. And now I have to set up the forums this weekend.
I know, because I just...
Thanks a lot. No, I'm just kidding. I've always wanted to have our own forums. It just makes sense to have it like within our community. And this way we can unite our different groups of people, right? Like, we have a Twitter group. We have a Facebook group. Well, we sort of have a Facebook group.
Hey, I put a post up saying that we were recording live, and we've got like 50 likes on Facebook. We're about the same on Google+, and they're all different... people. Like, I mean, we, Ryan and I both spend a lot of time on Twitter, so we interact there the most. But I mean, we've got fans all over the place. So
yeah. So this will be a good way to kind of bring that group together while still having unique conversations on each social media. But this way we can have one main hub for everybody to kind of talk and discuss episodes, content, suggestions, all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to bringing our stuff back over to our own space. And I think it's a very good move for us. So yeah, on to what we're playing. Ryan, what have you been doing for the last little while?
I've been keeping busy with games and such. So, I mean, first up, Walking Dead Episode 2. This game came... I was really looking forward to playing this when I finished Episode 1. And then the problem with episodic gaming is that a new episode comes out 2 months later and you kind of forget about it. So I've had this installed on Steam for a couple good weeks and just never got around to playing it. But, oh, man. Sunday, I couldn't put it down. I had to put it down. I had a bunch of meetings that day. But anyways, I got into it and it just starts off like, boom, action. I know that's one thing that people had an issue with in the first one, and it was kind of a little slow. And then even when it did get pick up, you know, after the car accident and there's this a bit of a zombie interaction, it was still kind of slow. You know, it didn't build well. It kind of, you know, puttered along. But with episode two, it's like a roller coaster. It starts and then goes, you know, really tense, really action, then come back down for a pause, and then just up and down, up and down. So this one's been really good.
I was going to say, I didn't hear any kind of bad stuff about episode one. Everyone was talking about that praising it pretty highly. And so I had no idea that it was kind of slow and...
Well, in comparison to episode two, you kind of see that it was a little slow. Like, the action was more, you could sit back and kind of, there was a few points where you had to, like, make a decision, like, quickly. Like, all the conversations are timed and stuff. But in comparison to episode two, it just felt like most of the decisions were, like, a sit back and kind of, like, okay, what do I want to do here? How do I solve this issue? How do I tell this dumb woman how to put batteries in a radio? I mean, in this one is a little different where, like, also there was less focus on the zombies, which is something that people praise The Walking Dead for, is that, you know, this is a zombie comic, this is a zombie TV show, but it focuses on human drama. What happens when the apocalypse comes down and people start acting like, you know, bad people, I guess we'll say, for lack of a better descriptor. But yeah.
And stuff like this is why I enjoy Stephen King so much, is because he does that a lot with his horror. Is most of the time his stories don't necessarily focus on the events so much as they focus on the way that people react in given situations. And that's where the scary horror comes from, is like the worst of the worst reactions of people, not necessarily like, oh my god, zombies, blood dripping, you know. So that's, I haven't actually played episode one or two of Walking Dead yet, but I think I'm really gonna, I need to pick it up. I think it's gonna be good. I can't decide if I want to do them in little bits, like one and two and three when they come out, or if I want to just get them all like one big game at the end when they're all released.
My suggestion would be to pick it up, because episode two hasn't, like I said, episode two is nice and packaged. It introduces a segment and concludes a segment. Like, it goes in and it goes out, and then you're satisfied with what's going on. With episode one, it's sort of like, sorry?
No cliffhangers?
No. No, not really. Without giving anything away, I mean, like in episode one, it's sort of just a steady build and then stops. With episode two, it's just, like I said, roller coaster, then concludes. It concludes that segment of the story. And I think if you were to pick it up now and play through episode one and two, you'd get a good feel as to what to expect throughout the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you'll definitely notice that there are some great little action pieces. And in this episode, it feels like the zombies are kind of, they're secondary characters, but they're not the bad guys. If anything, sometimes in this one, the zombies are sort of a good thing, I guess, is hard to say, but I hope I'm not spoiling anything. You're probably confused, so I'm not spoiling anything.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused, so you're not spoiling. And I mean, like, I've seen the first season of the show, and I've read the comics. I've read comics past where the show actually is right now, so. But yeah, even like things that you're saying, you're kind of confusing me. So I think, I think it's good. I think with all these different interpretations of, you know, the material, then we're getting a lot of different takes on it and a lot of like little plot twists that are a little bit different. So it's almost a different experience every time, like a different story.
Yeah. This one, I think, falls in line with the comic books, but takes place during a point which, Robert Kirkman didn't cover in the comics.
Oh, okay.
So cool, you're still prior to
So again, new material, new story, like that's cool,
but still within the canon of the book. So if you see a character, you'll know, oh well, that guy's not gonna die, or that chick lives long enough to do such and such. But you're looking at about 4 to 5 hours of gameplay with the first two episodes. So if you get in there and play that, that's a good solid time to play it and then be like, yeah, that's cool, I'm ready for a break. And episode 3 is supposed to come out in August, so really looking forward to that.
Well, they're really not that big of gaps in between. You kind of get the release and then, you know, 2 months or so, and then the next one. So that's not too long to wait.
Yeah, my understanding is that the time between episode 1 and 2 was the longest we'll ever have to wait, and Telltale is like, yeah, we know we have a hit on our hands, so we're not going to make you wait. And that's why they announced like almost right away that they were doing absolute best to have episode 3 out sometime in August.
Right. So Walking Dead episode 2, how much are we talking price-wise?
You're talking $25 on Steam, which I've been playing on the PC, I guess I should mention. And it does support a controller, but I find the mouse keyboard controls work really well. But unfortunately, it would have been the perfect time to pick it up during the Steam sale. It was 40% off, but it's totally worth the $25. You should not be at all, unless you hate zombies. I know we have a few people that listen or aren't a fan of zombies, but
I'm not a huge fan of zombies. I think they're kind of overdone, but The Walking Dead is one franchise that I do enjoy, so
yeah. And it's not like typical zombie games where you're shooting zombies. There's no, like, you know, headshot, I gotta kill a zombie. You barely kill zombies in these games. It's more about the drama.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So, sorry, I don't know 100% how many episodes there are.
There will be 5 in total. So when you purchase that season pass, you'll get 5.
$25 a pop, that's a pricey game there, boy.
Oh, it's totally worth... Oh, wait, sorry. $25 for the whole season.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like $25 for episode 1 and 2, and I was like, whoa.
That would be pricey.
Yeah, that would be like, we're talking $125 for a game. Wow. But that's cool.
Yeah. So we were going to talk about Batman last week, but you've been actually rocking the Batman, right?
Yeah, I played the crap out of Batman. It was one of the titles that Joel really got into, and then I saw him playing, and then I was like, oh, man, I forgot how cool this game was. So, I threw in Arkham Asylum, which I bought on PC first, played it through, but not very far, and I didn't like the keyboard and mouse controls. But then when Arkham City came out, I got Arkham Asylum in like a bundle. So for the $60 that you got Arkham City for, if you bought it at Walmart, they threw in Arkham Asylum for free. So I got them both on Xbox. And it was actually Arkham Asylum with the controller on Xbox was awesome. I had a lot of fun. So it was a pretty small game though, which I was expecting. So I beat it in a couple days, you know, probably about 10-15 hours. And then I played another 3-ish hours to pick up most of the Riddler trophies. I think I still have about 20 left, and so I'm at 80% complete of the Batman Arkham Asylum content. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, that's a game that I picked up during my university years. Me and my roommate were like, hey, this new Batman game is like $40 off, $40 at Walmart on launch. Let's go get it. So we went and got it. And I think it's one of the few games where we sat and played it, and it's like, we got to play more. And I actually 100%ed it. That game actually has the right amount of Riddler trophies where you can get all of them without bashing your head over with a giant rock of some kind.
Well, and the maps to show the Riddler, to reveal the locations of Riddler trophies, were actually quite easy to find. You know, you pretty much picked up the map for each location through your regular, like, main storyline completion. You know, you didn't have to go way out of your way to try to find the map. It was usually just, like, in the maintenance area or, you know, like, in an office. It was always kind of a logical spot to have a piece of paper. So, yeah, it was, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was easy. Not easy, easy, but, you know, like, kind of laid out before you in a easy to grasp kind of a way.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit, at first I was kind of, I didn't think there was a lot of upgrades, but I mean, it took me pretty much the whole game or the whole main storyline to pick up all the upgrades. So it was good pacing, good timing on it, I think. But Arkham City, on the other hand, I was really not impressed with.
Oh,
I remember back in November when I first started playing the game, like, it was awesome. It was fun. I hadn't played Arkham Asylum yet. So the whole Batman universe was pretty new to me because I jumped right into Arkham City. I didn't wait to play City until I beat Asylum. So I kind of jumped right in. It was a lot of fun. And I thought the political prisoner angle was kind of cool. And the main story was awesome. And then so I was playing through. And I thought that I was about, like, maybe halfway through, because I knew that I put some serious time in before Skyrim came out.
Right.
But then I put it down and haven't touched it. So I put the game in, and I played for 45 minutes, maybe an hour, and finished the game.
Oh.
And, I was already 90% of the way done the main storyline. And so I played, and then I was like, wait, what? This is the end? Okay. That wasn't very long. Like, I was so disappointed. Everyone was talking, oh, should have been, like, if it hadn't come out in the same year as Skyrim, totally would have been game of the year, blah, blah, blah. Like, no.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, but I didn't think it was that bad. Now, did you, now you mentioned here you didn't do a lot of the extra content. Now, the extra content in AC compared to Arkham Asylum is that it's more than Riddler trophies. You have, like, the Catwoman trophies, yeah. And then you also have, like, the side missions. Did you do any of the extra side missions that are available to you?
Missions through the regular, cadence of the main storyline. So I completed a couple. I know I can go back and redo side missions. But in terms of the main storyline, I felt like, in Arkham Asylum, it felt like there was a lot to do. You got to see a lot of the different villains, and it was challenging. And in Arkham City, it just seemed like, even though it looked big and open, it wasn't, like, actually big and open and long. And I don't know. And it might just be that, you know, now I've played Skyrim, and there's 150 hours of content there, that anything else seems very small in comparison. But I felt that even Arkham City was small in comparison to Arkham Asylum. And I know it's just the feel of the game more so than the actual time I spent on it, but I was so disappointed. Like, I thought I had twice the main storyline content, because I realized the extra stuff adds more to the game, but I thought the main storyline could have been longer and more involved and everything else. Like, I couldn't believe that the final boss fight was actually the end of the game. I was like, what?
Boo. Yeah. It is a weird thing. I mean, the way the both the Batman games are set up, it feels like they should be longer, you know, kind of an open map, a bunch of collectibles, like, but it is a very story heavy game, so I can see them wanting to make you focus in on the story and get that done and have it done quick. But do you have any interest in playing the epilogue DLC that's out for Arkham City? Sorry,
I wasn't even, I don't even think I knew. We might have covered it in a news story or something, but it didn't even kind of register to me that there's, oh wait, yeah, that's Harley Quinn's Revenge, right?
Right.
It adds another couple of hours to the, yeah. Yeah, I might pick that up if it goes on sale. Like,
I would suggest picking it up. Although, mind you, it might go on sale probably, like, in the next couple months. But I find that because I went and played it like 6 months after putting down Arkham City, and I found that I spent the first half of that learning how to play again. And it is a shorter piece of DLC. So if I were you, I'd think about like playing it like right away. This way you're still in the feel of it.
Yeah. I feel like if Arkham City had maybe 4 hours more, I would have been content. I still probably would have felt like it ended early, but if it had a few more hours of content, I thought like, okay, yeah, this is a solid game. Good story, like way to go. And not that the main storyline was bad. It was a little bit predictable and way too short. And I mean, to finish the main storyline of a game, doing some Riddler trophies and doing some of the side missions and still being at like, I think 35 or 40% complete, like, your main storyline is called a main storyline for a reason. It should be the main part of your game. And so if it's the main part of your game, when you finish it, you should be at like 51% or more. Like,
right. So it sounds like you didn't touch any of the sort of secondary missions, we'll call them, like the Mad Hatter stuff. Did you do any of that?
Mad Hatter one. And then there's like the Deadshot one and the Zazz stuff with the ringing phones. And I definitely completed the Mad Hatter one, and I think I did part of each of the other ones. Like, I kind of have, like, somewhere between 20 and 40% of most of the other ones, but the only one I think I went all the way through was the Mad Hatter. So, you know, I didn't do a lot of the side content, but still, like...
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, and I sort of do agree with you. I remember when I beat it, it was sort of like, I was really looking forward to this game, and it's almost like it's when you beat a game that you've been looking forward to for the last 2 years, it's sort of a letdown when you, I mean, even if the developer only meant for you to get 20 hours of play out of it, it sort of feels like a letdown. It's like, I could have done a little more with that.
Yeah, I don't even feel like the main storyline was 20 hours because I didn't put all that much time in. I think I got it a week before Skyrim. So I only played maybe 2 nights. So that's like 10-ish hours. Maybe a little bit more of content, and then another couple hours here. So, you know, we're under 15 hours of a main storyline, and I don't really think that that's enough. A franchise like Batman that has so much material to draw from. Like, if you're a brand new franchise and, you know, you're trying to build up your world and build up your fan base and, you know, you're maybe not charging $60 for a game. Maybe you're down in the $40 range or you're an indie title or something. Then 10 to 15 hours is fine. But when you're Batman, come on.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been so long since I've played it. It's hard to argue with you. But from what I recall, looking back, it was a lot of fun.
And yeah, like I said, and when I was in it, it was fine. It was fun. But it just, the story was a little bit disappointing. But I mean, still worth picking up now, I think. Like, if you're looking for something to play through the summer kind of thing, then I mean, it's a short title. But what about you? You picked up something tiny.
Very nice. Wait, what? No. This is part of the Steam sale. I picked up Tiny and Big Grandpa's Leftovers, the soundtrack edition. So basically, Steam's been doing this weird thing where they have these indie titles, but they for like a couple extra dollars, they bundle them with soundtracks. And I'm pretty sure they did this for me because I bought a lot of titles on Steam with the soundtrack. And basically, in this game, you play Tiny, and you're trying to save your grandfather's pants, which are not pants. They look like underwear. So I don't know why they don't call it underwear. But anyways, it's pants. And they've been stolen by your brother, Big, who wants to use them to take over the world. Yeah. So these are magical underwear, which, I mean, let's face it, who doesn't have magical underwear? The graphics are really cool. They kind of look like a Borderlands type game, cel-shaded with a comic book feel. The soundtrack, like I said, is amazing. I've actually listened to the soundtrack more than actually even before I played the game. I was playing the soundtrack in last week's pre-show, and it was a lot of fun. So basically how the game works, it's a traversal game, sort of like a puzzle platformer. And you start off in this desert canyon, and you slowly gain your tools because you crash obviously. And the first thing you pick up is like a grapple hook, and you can use that to pull objects. Now, at first, it's sort of like, oh, this is boring, but when combined with the laser, you get a laser and you sort of like cut objects. So by cutting objects, you can like cut a portion of the rock off to use as a ramp, or you can just pull it off to make better steps and stuff. It's sort of hard to explain, but just the tools you're given are really cool, and you use them to get across the this cavern. And also you're given a rocket. You can like shoot rockets. So if say you're like you're trying to get up to a certain ledge and there's like jagged rocks in front of it, you can cut the rocks in a certain place and then attach a rocket to like shoot the extra piece out of the way, so you can kind of jump from portion to portion. And the game just sort of keeps throwing different locations at you. At one point, you're trying to climb a giant tower. At another point, you're trying to get down to the bottom of a tower. Really cool boss encounters where you have to deal with your brother Big, who's like throwing rocks at you. And in order to kind of dodge the rocks, you have to cut them in midair. So they kind of, as you cut them, they sort of just fly by you, I guess is the best way to put it. But yeah, it's a really cool little indie title, and I gotta say, for I think it's like maybe $10 on Steam without the soundtrack, I would highly suggest picking it up. It's just a small little title. It took about 3 or 4 hours to get through. So again, if you're looking for something really small to play and having a good time, there is controller support. I didn't play it with the mouse. I played it with the controller, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So is this one of the titles that you got in the Steam sale?
Yes, it is. The Steam sale, I mean, I don't know if you want me to just jump into this. I got sort of a wrap up here.
Total transition there.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure. Anyways, the Steam sale, as Jocelyn, you're so lucky. I know you're cursing that you're missing all these deals, but if you look at here, this list that I have here, in total, I spent about $90 in the Steam sale. And I recommend if anyone kind of went into the Steam sale and bought a bunch of stuff, don't do what I'm about to do. You know, including the purchases I made last week, I bought Tiny and Big, Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, Crater, Metro 2033, Arma 2 Combined Ops for Daisy, Splinter Cell Conviction, and Saints Row the Third Collection.
Physics, guys.
Exactly. I got the collection there for all the DLC for Saints Row, and yeah, $90, and I'm slowly making my way through. I've been really good. I beat episode 2. I beat Tiny and Big, and I'm moving on to the next thing.
Have you played Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet yet? Because that's one of the ones. It was was that part of Summer of Arcade last year or something?
It was. I think it was last year.
Because I remember seeing it, and it reminded me of like a Little Big Planet kind of a title, and it was really cool looking. But I never picked it up. But
yeah, no, I played the demo on Xbox, and I kind of digged it, but I didn't think it was worth the $15 price tag, and I kind of just sort of moved on. And it was $4 on Steam on sale, so it was like sort of no brainer. I'll pick it up.
I'll see. Maybe it'll go on sale sometime later on in the summer and I can pick it up, but
yeah.
Cool. Well, I think we should move on to quick news because we have some exciting conversation to have after news. So I want to get into it and I don't want to run out of time. So EA joins the opposition to the Defense of Marriage Act. EA has joined many other businesses in stating its opposition to the Defense of Marriage Act. The act is a U.S. law that was instituted in 1996 that does not legally recognize gay marriage. The act has been under attack for the past few months after it was ruled unconstitutional by the U.S. Appeals Court in Boston. EA stated that they oppose DOMA because of the regulatory, tax, and discrimination complications it creates for employers. They have been a loud voice against discrimination, publishing games that feature LGBT characters, as well as taking part in the It Gets Better campaign, among others.
Warner Brothers denies having two new release announcements for Gamescom. Last Friday, Denmark game site Gamers Globe reported that publisher Warner Brothers would reveal two unannounced projects, going further saying one would be a major release. The publisher declined to comment on the rumor and stated they did not release any such report. Seems like misdirection to me, maybe a new Batman game, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. Gamescom runs from August 15th to the 19th, so stay tuned for news on the show in the coming episodes of The Gamers Inn.
Developers chime in on the Steam sales devalue games debate. There's an ongoing debate in the PC gaming community about the effect Steam sales have on the industry. The sales in question usually involve titles going on sale for anywhere up to 90% off. Sometimes full titles where $60 can be found for only a dollar or two. Some argue that sales like this cannibalize franchises and devalue games as a whole, an idea that Valve, the makers of Steam, have long contested. This week, in the wake of the latest Steam summer sale, Runic Games CEO Max Schaefer has put in his 2 cents and backed Valve, saying, quote-unquote, "We find that we get several thousand percent increases in units and revenue on the days of the Steam sales, and unit sales are usually about double the normal for a few weeks after the sales are over. According to Max, sales like these revive old franchises and generate interesting games that otherwise would fall into obscurity within a year or so of release. Unlike the effect of smartphone games making people unwilling to purchase games for more than a few dollars and therefore making developers lose money, Valve and their supporters look at this as an opportunity to reach new customers who would otherwise not have purchased the title. Buzz created by selling a title like Torchlight for a few dollars would create a fan of the franchise who is more likely to go out and buy Torchlight 2, thus further growing the franchise. We here at the Gamers Inn tend to agree with Valve."
THQ manages to keep its head above the NASDAQ waters. For the last few months, THQ has made the news a lot, mostly with bad news. This week, however, the management team at the once shining publisher has something to cheer about. The publisher announced this morning it had maintained $1 per share price during the last 10 business days, meaning it's no longer being threatened with a NASDAQ delisting. There's still a lot of work required to keep the company going strong, including strong sales performance from Darksiders 2 due out in August. Here's hoping they can pull through.
Zynga stocks tank after their quarterly numbers are revealed. So it turns out, be evil is actually not the best company motto. Zynga, the makers of social games like Farmville, saw their stock tank 40% in after-hours trading shortly after announcing a net loss of almost $23 million this quarter, in spite of its revenue increasing. The company cited many reasons for the loss, including reduced expectations for Draw Something, a Pictionary-type game on the mobile platform purchased by Zynga in March for $200 million. Even with Zynga's excuses, investors are still dropping the stock like crazy.
Nintendo posts another loss this quarter. But hey, the 3DS is once again profitable. The company announced a loss of 17.23 billion yen, roughly $220 million. On the bright side, it's less than what was lost last year. Most people point at this, Jocelyn, and think, hey, there's a bleeding company. When can I download Super Mario iOS? Nintendo isn't quite at that point yet, but they have a lot to prove in the next year. With a profitable handheld system and the Wii U launching this fall, it may just be enough to bring the company back into the black.
The Wii U is important to the world, says Nintendo. Seriously? Stop saying things like this. Someone take the shovel away, please. Nintendo president Satoru Iwata, I'm sorry I'm butchering that, said in an interview this week that being the first next-gen console is not what is important. They are not looking to compete with Sony and Microsoft on the guts of the console, but rather want to differentiate themselves. They're doing a good job of that. Apparently, what the other companies are putting forward does not matter, because this is the time for Nintendo. The Wii U is going to be important for the world. Big claims, Nintendo, especially when your console is not going to compete on a technical level with all the others.
Operation Overwatch this weekend. BioWare announced another operation for Mass Effect 3 multiplayer starting Friday and running through to Sunday. Has it really already been 2 weeks since we had the last one? I mean, it feels like we just did this. Anyways, you know the drill. There's a squad goal and an allied goal. The squad goal is to get an extraction on any difficulty with at least one player as a character from the Earth DLC. The allied goal is to extract 800,000 individual players on any difficulty. Now, because we all dropped the ball a few weeks back, extraction time is going to take a little longer. Way to go. You guys suck. Just kidding. Just kidding.
So that brings us to our topic of the week, which is Mists of Pandaria gets a release date, September 25th, 2012. So 2 months from now, we are going to have a new WoW expansion in our hands. Are you excited, Ryan? Because I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm ready. I think when I suggested we talk about this, I said the whole point of this segment is to convince Ryan to pre-order the game right now.
Oh, man. I don't know if I'm going to pre-order or not. I think what Joel and I are going to do is do our best to get our characters up to level 85, because since my PC has been in Ontario, we actually haven't been playing WoW for the last month. So it's going to be nice to get back to it. We're actually both really excited for Friday night. I think I'm just going to chug a whole ton of Red Bull after working a couple days and really have at it. So I'm actually just going to quick plug here. If anyone wants to play on Argent Dawn, our characters are on Argent Dawn and we're about level 33. So come play with us. We're fun. Really, really like to do a whole like instance and not die.
There you go.
Yeah, if anyone's around and wants to play with us, we need friends.
I need to get back in. I need to do it. I want to. I want to roll a Pandaren. I want to be a panda.
Pandaren? I don't know.
I don't know. It's a panda. Anyways, it's not a real thing. But, yeah.
So yeah, we have three different packages. You can go with the regular package for $40, the digital deluxe edition for $60, or the collector's edition for $80. So they're going up in $20 increments, which I think is smart. So with the regular edition, you get your digital download of the expansion, and that's $40. And then the deluxe edition has a couple of extra things. We've got the digital bonuses of the collector's edition along with your expansion. So the collector's edition includes behind the scenes DVD and Blu-ray, a CD soundtrack, an art book, a music pad is not a thing.
It should be.
It is now.
Patent pending.
We'll make that. With our permission, though. Special in-game pet and mount, StarCraft II Battle.net portraits, which is an infested orc and Night Elf Templar, whatever those are. Don't play StarCraft II yet, so don't really know. But
those are Warcraft things.
Huh?
Those are Warcraft things.
They sound like Warcraft things. Oh, anyway.
Well, what I'm thinking is like an infested orc would be like an orc that is like infested with Zerg, and then a Night Elf Templar would be a Night Elf that looks like a Protoss Templar. So I guess you're sort of right.
They're doing like cross promotion between their other games, because the other thing that you get is a Diablo 3 banner sigil and accents that are like Pandaren markings and stuff. So I'm sure there's probably like a panda paw or something, and I haven't actually seen pictures of the banner, but basically they're trying to just basically with their WoW expansion to advertise all their other games, which they've done before with the including the like guest passes in with the hard copies of the game. So when you get your boxed copy of WoW, then it comes with like 7 days of StarCraft II or, you know, whatever, all that kind of fancy stuff. So they've done this before. This is just digital now. That's all.
Yeah. Battle.net is basically their way of promoting all their universes in one fell swoop. So when they announce a new title, like I'm sure when Heart of the Swarm comes out, we'll get the same thing. Like you'll get some sort of in-game WoW pet. You'll get another Diablo 3 banner sigil. It just, there will be cross promotion. Expect this to happen with every new release from Blizzard for sure.
So the digital deluxe will have your in-game pet and mount, and then the StarCraft 2 and Diablo 3 bonuses. And then I'm sure it'll probably also include the soundtrack, because the collector's edition has a soundtrack CD, but it would be very weird for $20 an in-game pet and mount. Well, I guess mounts are normally $25, so maybe that's what they're thinking.
Yeah, I don't know if that's worth it to me to have like a unique mount and pet. The soundtrack might push me over the edge to get the digital deluxe. Sorry?
You're a soundtrack whore.
I know. You know what?
Coming with tracks the way you used to be with video games.
Well, if it's not a podcast about video games, it's a soundtrack from a video game. I mean, come on. This is our, 32nd episode? You should know this by now.
So I think for me, I haven't decided yet because I just found out the pricing before the show. But I mean, it's going to be either $40 for the regular edition, or I'm going to go all the way to the collector's edition to get, like, I mean, the art book. We have a lot of art books here, shockingly. So, I mean, like, we have the Skyrim one. I think we have all the other WoW ones. So we might get maybe one regular edition and one collector's edition for the house kind of thing. So,
yeah,
I probably wouldn't watch the behind the scenes thing, but the art book would be nice to have. The soundtrack would be cool. I mean, I have my awesome Nerdtacular mouse pad, so I don't need a new mouse pad, but...
I've never bought a collector's edition for WoW. As weird as that sounds.
You hadn't bought a collector's edition. I'm like, Ryan, you're lying right to my face.
I meant just for WoW. I mean, I've never was into... Like, WoW for me kind of comes in stages. It's like this itch that keeps coming back, right? Like, I bought WoW, and then Burning Crusade came out. It's like, yeah, let's play. So another year onto it. And then same thing with Wrath of Lich King. So, but you make a valid point. I'd actually be interested in the behind-the-scenes DVD. I think that would be cool.
I think it'd be interesting. I mean, they've done a lot of work. They put off BlizzCon this year because they've been doing so much to get ready for this. And there's some really neat things that are coming out, like some of the new features of Mist. We should probably actually tell people what we're talking about here.
Sure.
Is that you get a new playable race, which is the Pandarian. And one really cool thing about them that I didn't know until tonight, because I haven't been playing the beta, I haven't been paying a lot of attention because it's like such a low level right now that I don't understand a lot of the end game stuff. So I don't know what happens up at level 80 and 85 and 90. So I haven't been paying a lot of attention to the expansion, but the Pandarians are actually neutral. So you start out with your Pandarian character, and then at level 10 or 20 or whatever it is when you actually leave their starting area, you choose if you want to ally yourself with the Horde or the Alliance,
mm-hmm.
which is really, really cool.
It's a neat idea that most people assume they do with the goblins. It was something that was rumored before the goblins were like, okay, it's going to be a Horde race. People were thinking that, yeah, if they were to do a neutral race, that'd be cool, and we think it would be the goblins. No one really thought that they would have the Pandarans. It was always rumored, but no one's like, they're not going to put Pandarans. That's sort of like this side universe that is like a joke that doesn't exist. I don't think it's a joke. I think it's really cool, but a lot of like hardcore WoW fans, like Warcraft fans in general, kind of thought it was sort of this side universe that, you know, doesn't really mix well. But I'm actually excited to play the Pandarans.
The new location is interesting as well, because they're saying that it's like, I was reading up on it on the Blizzard site tonight, and they were saying that the new location, Pandaria, is actually like, or the starting area is like the back of a sea turtle. So it's always moving, and that's like, they're not really involved in the world and the war, and that's why you start as neutral. And I was kind of like, oh man, such a good idea. And Ralph in the chat room is saying that you are neutral until level 10. So yeah
and then you get to choose
your allegiance, whether mm-hmm. you're in Alliance or Horde. But I kind of thought that because they were so cuddly and cute that they were just going to be Alliance, and so I was kind of like, well, and what's going to happen with the Horde? Because, you know, you can't have more races over on the Alliance side than the Horde side. And so I was a little bit confused, but I thought maybe they were holding something out on us. But I think the neutrality thing is way cool. So they're also going to give us a higher level cap, which everybody already knew. So Cataclysm brought us up to 85, so now the level cap will be 90. And there's also a new class, which is the Monk, which, you can pretty much... I think you can be... Any of the other races can be Monks, right?
I'm not... Sure, but it wouldn't surprise me. WoW has sort of transitioned. I remember back in the day, like, they had strict class-race relationships, but after a while, it was sort of a feature that, like, now you can be any class as any race, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if it was all of them, but I'm not exactly sure. But yeah, Monk, it's so stereotypical, but, like, everybody's going to roll a Pandaren Monk, just like everyone... No, that doesn't make sense. I was going to say everyone rolled like a Death Knight Undead, but I'm looking forward to trying the Monk, and I'm not going to lie, I'll probably roll a Pandaren Monk. But it's been so long since I played, I don't even know what class I'd want to be.
Well, I mean, I'm really enjoying my Blood Elf Hunter, but I mean, like, Joel and I were talking about, like, we might go make a couple of, like, little gnome characters, or maybe some goblins, or, you know, just try out some of the other little bit kind of their characters and just play around in the starting areas and things like that. But we really do need to level up our main characters.
Yeah. You're sitting at, you said 30, right? So you got a whiles to go before. Are you looking forward to the end game stuff? You mentioned a bit there.
Like I said, when we were playing more often, we tried an instance. I can't remember. I think Shadowfang Keep rings a bell.
Yep.
And it's rated for 5 people, and we did it with 2, and we kind of hit the second guy in the dungeon and just kept almost beating him, but then dying, which is so frustrating. It would be really nice to get that experience, but with more people. Because, I mean, like, I was just doing damage dealing, and then Joel was trying to heal and tank at the same time, and it was just, oh, God, it was a mess. So, you know, and it was, but it was still fun, and I could see how that would be fun with a whole big group of people. But yeah, so that's the kind of stuff that we really want to start doing. And, I mean, neither one of us has any experience in endgame, because Joel, when he was playing the first time around, only got up to about level 45. Hmm. So neither one of us is there. Like, we're kind of, we've hit the spot that basically as far as he's ever been in WoW. So it's going to be interesting, I think.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. We just have to find the time to play, and we have to play a lot to get ready for Pandaria. So we'll see.
Yeah, the highest level I've had is an 80, and I've done raids and stuff, and some of the most fun you'll have in that game is doing like 10-man instances, and I think they have 25-man instances, and it requires a lot of coordination, and frankly, that's the reason I play DPS, is that I feel pressure. It's like, oh my God, don't yell at me. I'm sorry. I stood in the poop or the fire or whatever, right? So
poop, Ryan.
Yeah.
You stand in the poop.
Yeah, and that's why I could never be a healer or a tank. I don't know if I can take that kind of pressure to like let like these 24 other strangers down. But it's so weird that they're releasing this in September. I could have sworn I was thinking they'd release it in December as per their usual schedule. But I mean,
well,
I'm not complaining.
A week ago, when Joel picked up the Wrath Lich King and Cataclysm on that big huge sale that Blizzard did, like that wasn't Steam or some other, you know, third party, like that was Blizzard putting everything, all their expansions on for $10,
right?
Obviously that's leading up to something, and that's leading up to something soon, you know. That's them saying, oh well, within the next couple of months we want to make sure that everyone has everything they need to play Pandaria. Like, they're not going to do a sale like that 6 months before they launch the game. So yeah, I'm not surprised with a late September launch at all.
Well, I mean, it's a good time for me anyways. I mean, when you think about it, September sort of gives us a month before you get into like the big titles. Like, November's going to be a busy month. Well, it usually is. So, I mean, I can't really pick anything out of my brain right now, but
Halo 4, dude, Halo 4.
Well, besides Halo 4, I mean, that's a first-person shooter. It's not that tough to, that won't get in the way of an MMO.
It kind of will, though, because, I mean, like, you and I, we would be playing WoW, and we're going to be playing Halo 4, and they may not directly compete in terms of being the same genre, but, I mean, gamers are going to play them, and there's only so many hours in the day, so.
It's true. I'm pretty sure we're missing something. We're missing that Skyrim title that is direct competition and will suck a lot of time. Like, Halo, I sort of see as, it's like, yeah, play through the single player, play a couple of the co-op stuff, and play the multiplayer. It all depends on how gripping it is. But no, I'm looking forward to picking up Mists of Pandaria. You know, I do this every time there's an expansion. I'll pick it up, and it adds about a couple months on. But I really should get back in and play Cataclysm, because, like, man, I bought that thing and put, like, $45 in subscription into it and never, you know, didn't get very far.
Yeah, and so there's also a couple of other new features which are really interesting that I think people are going to be at least interested by, if not actually really happy with. Pet battles.
Pandokemon.
Exactly.
I didn't coin that. I am pretty sure I've heard it on the instance a few times, so credit where credit is due.
But yeah, like, so you get to battle your pets against other people, and that levels them up, and you can unlock new abilities and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a game within a game, which I think a lot of people are really going to get into. And then also there's challenge mode, which is basically you go into a dungeon and you select at like before you even start if you want to just play normally or if you want to do challenge mode. And then basically you're just going through the dungeon as fast as you possibly can. So when you finish the dungeon, if you beat the dungeon's like set time, then you win rewards. And they're going to be mostly cosmetic, but still really cool, like badges in front of your name and, you know, like different skins for your armor and all that kind of stuff. So I'm
That's awesome. It's sort of like Avatar Awards.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Cool.
So there are going to be ways for players just when you're running around in WoW to identify other really, really good dungeon people.
Mm.
So it's like a status thing, you know?
Yeah, an epeen, if you will. I probably don't want to.
Yeah.
I hate that term. Why would I say that?
No. So anyways, yeah, there's a lot of other really cool side game kind of things that Blizzard is coming out to make WoW a little bit more interesting for some people who've been playing. I mean, the game's been out for 7 years or 8 years or something. So they got to do something to spice it up more so than just another race and another class. So I think this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to playing it, and I think it's going to bring a lot to the WoW world.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's something Blizzard's been doing with this expansion and the last one is just kind of, you know, refining it, adding more stuff to keep the hardcores interested. Because like you said, it's very tough to say I've been playing a game for 7 years and still find it interesting.
Yeah. So that brings us to listener feedback. And we have a website comment this week from Dave, who is King Argyle in our chat room. So Ryan, do you want to go ahead and read this out?
Yeah, this was a comment on last week's episode where we talked about video game movies, and Dave says this: the problem with video game movies is the same problem that Marvel had for years. You need people that play video games / read comics to direct and write the movies. Without somebody that knows the universe and the genre inside and out, you are going to get crap from Hollywood. Get people like Felicia Day, Will Wheaton, Joss Whedon, and others that know the gaming culture and what it takes to write a game to be involved. It is why Sam Raimi did a great first two Spider-Man movies, why Peter Jackson did The Lord of the Rings right, and they lived in that universe growing up. So, that's a really good point. I think he's on the right track. And I think that's why the Halo stuff coming out is going to be a great representation of this exact comment, because Microsoft was doing it right. We even mentioned this in last week's show, so I won't go into it very far. But yeah, Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn is them doing a movie the way it should be done. From the creators, by the creators, casted by the creators, written by the creators. So that's the way to do it. But in terms of big budget, especially with Sam Raimi, the good thing about him directing World of Warcraft, or when he was directing, is that he actually played and enjoyed the universe.
Yeah.
So
you need somebody who is not pandering to the fans, but who has, like you said, played the game and understands the culture and the people who enjoy that specific video game or just video games in general. Like, you can't be someone outside of this industry and make a movie to please people in the industry. Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah. And another good example of it being done right is the Mortal Kombat web series that they've done. That's something we talked about on Fanboys XL, was that it just recently got renewed for a second season. And that's a show done by people passionate for the Mortal Kombat franchise. And actually, Warner Brothers, the guys who own the rights, actually approached them after they saw the pilot and said, "We want you to make this because you're going to make the Mortal Kombat movie that our fans want to see."
Mm-hmm.
So if we keep going with this trend, I think eventually Hollywood's going to click and say, "Oh, we should probably do it this way and we'll make millions." So
that what has happened to comic book movies is going to happen to video game movies. It's just going to take the money and the backing and then, you know, getting the right person involved and picking the right franchise. Like, Spider-Man really started all of the good comic book movies. It proved that it could be done. Mm-hmm. So I think we just need that first really, really good video game movie that isn't like Call of Duty or Resident Evil, like something that isn't a shooter and something that isn't a horror, something that kind of appeals to a wider audience that's going to do really well, bring in lots of money and get people to say, oh, if we throw money in, we're going to get way more back.
Yeah. You need that proof concept that we just haven't had yet.
Yeah. So if you have any thoughts on Mists of Pandaria or video game movies or anything else that we've discussed on the show, you can email us at info@gamersandpodcast.com, or you can visit us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find the show on Facebook at facebook.com/TheGamersInn. And we're also on Google+. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to my brother, Greg, for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCross Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan or read his comic online at www.starcrossedonline.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week. You're going to get the show, and then I'm going to have to run. But, I mean, Ryan might stick around and chat with you. Who knows?
Maybe, if they're good. That's my best impression of a fax machine. If I click that and I end up buying it, I'm blaming you, Warcrusher. Oh my god, that mouse pad does look badass. Oh my god, look at that little cute little pet.
I know.
Damn it.
Oh, look at that little puppy. I want him to eat the faces of my enemies.